Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. There's a rather alarming statistics that has been produced by Civilic Access and IDC in that digital banking capex spending by bank has dropped from 70% back in 2015 to now 5%. So now the question is, has banks migrated enough in the digital banking landscape? What's next for the banking industry and more? Joining us on my left is Andrew Tan, the Group MD of Civilic Access Limited. Andrew, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us. Let's do a little bit of background in terms of what Civilic does before we jump into the whole conversation of the banking industry.
Okay, thank you, Ibrahim, for having me here. Civilic Access, you know, we are a company of having been around for 35 years. So we are a Malaysian company, but we are listed in the Singapore Stock Exchange and has been so for the last 20 years. We have offices in 16 countries, 25 offices. And essentially, we are an enterprise software technology firm, providing solutions, services to all sorts of enterprises, although 60% of what we do are for the banking sector. Mm. So as an example, in the Southeast Asia space, 40% of the top 20 banks, you know, they use our solutions. So if every day you count the number of transactions, banking transactions, that goes through the core banking platform, you know, there will be roughly about 700 million transactions that goes through, you know, our solutions. So we are quite dominant, you know, here in this part of the world. Although we also are global. In Pakistan alone, 70% of the credit card transactions also run through our systems. We are also in other sectors outside of banking, but also like in the insurance side, we do e-claims processing. In Malaysia, you know, we have almost 100% of the insurance companies who are on our platform. 50%, you know, Singapore, in the Philippines and Indonesia are on our platform. So we are quite an established organization, you know, with about 2,000 people around the world.
How did you get into the banking industry? Because back in 35 years ago, core banking transaction might not necessarily be a primary focus for IT companies to do.
Yeah.
What drove Civilic Access into this sector?
I think 35 years ago, if you look at the Asia Pacific part of the world, you know, there has been a lot of transformation, you know, within the banking industry.
This is the 80s, right?
Exactly. I mean, if you look at a country like Indonesia, when they open up, and they have got like, you know, several hundred banks, and they're going through a period of growth, period of consolidation, and a lot of banks are modernizing. I think in those days, they were all rushing to open up branches. Even Malaysia, you know, similarly, you know, there were many, many banks, and all of them, you know, wanted to capture, you know, a larger slice of the market. So they need to modernize the technologies. Because back then, there were not very many offerings, you know, on the table. A lot of them are essentially, you know, from the mainframe, you know, kind of an environment. So I think, you know, we were quite well positioned in the sense that we managed to bring a solutions, you know, that provided them with the flexibility, provided them with the ability, you know, to look at, you know, the entire portfolio of customers and be able to anticipate what the needs are, you know, and go to market. Plus also the fact that, you know, I mean, the providers are mainly multinational players. So we are one of the few, you know, Asian players. So we were, you know, kind of ahead of the curve in terms of providing solutions that clearly, you know, that can resonate with our clients in this part of the world.
How I would like to describe the financial sector, not just banking in Malaysia, is that there are two graphs in my mind right now. The first is a J curve in terms of transactions. When it comes to timeline, you know, some years ago compared to today, there's a lot of transactions. And if I were to put my thinking hat on, the transactions are just going to grow in the future. That is in terms of the transaction. In terms of players, however, there seems to be a waxing and waning. There was a time, maybe you can, you know, tell me, because you've been around for far longer than I have. The players were out of control, I suppose, the number of players, to a point where it became necessary for the central bank to discuss with the players, existing players, to amalgamate some of the players. We're looking at the noughties, we're looking at the 90s, to a point where the commercial banks have now, I guess, reached a saturated period. And development banks, for instance, have also amalgamated. In fact, there's one now between MLDF, MBSB and the likes. But so it's widening and then it's narrowing, and now it's widening again, but not in the sense of a traditional banking player, We're looking at e-wallets. We're looking at digital banks now coming to the play. So how do you reconcile the number of entities and institutions versus the ever-increasing number of transactions that is going to happen in the future to come?
Well, I mean, let's not call it a banking industry. You know, let's call it a financial services industry, right? I think, you know, the distinction between banking and non-financial services entities, you know, is becoming blurrier and blurrier. I think, you know, with the advent of digitalization and, you know, the coming in, and, you know, a very agile, you know, fintech-type players. So it's kind of, you know, becoming a play where, you know, they need to coexist together. But I think at the end of the day, what you will see is that because there are all kinds of new transactions apart from just going to the bank and deposit a banking transaction or withdraw, you know, money from ATM or go online banking. Now you got all sorts. You know, I think, you know, the volume definitely has increased, you know, with the likes of, you know, the easy way, you know, that you can do payments, you know, in the world. So I think e-payments actually contributed to a large part of the transaction. The volumes have definitely gone up.
And not just, you know, the big volumes, it's also the microtransactions.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You can buy a can of Coke, 2-3 ringgit, and you pay QR. Exactly. That has to be captured somewhere, right?
Yes, yes.
So what does it mean in the joint report that the International Data Corporation, or IDC, and Silver Lake is doing that shows that banking the investment or capex into digital banking has dropped from 70% just 8 years ago to 5% this year? Does it mean that you know, financial institutions are not looking into this kind of space any longer, or is there something else?
I think they are definitely looking into it. You know, I think, you know, I think they are looking at broadening the customer base. You know, that's for sure. And I think, you know, the segment, you know, which is what I call the lower tier customer segments, you know, are, you know, in many ways, you know, the segments, you know, the banks want to get back into. But what they need to do, you know, is a few things. They need to create products, you know, that are more, that can resonate, you know, with the space. And like you say, you know, it could be in micro lending, right? You know, it could be, you know, lending in, you know, in the hundreds of ringgits as opposed to the thousands, you know, of ringgit. So they need to, you know, create, you know, that kind of ability. But and at the same time, in terms of assessing the risk, also becomes different. I wouldn't say that, you know, they are not investing in it. You know, I would say that, you know, it is a totally different ball game that they need to get into, because that's a space where, you know, the fintechs, you know, have naturally affiliated themselves to. And I think banks are figuring out, you know, how they can get into the space. And they are investing in digitalization. I think more and more, you know, the shift of the investments, you know, are away from the traditional, you know, core banking, you know, to more, you know, on areas, you know, with the use of analytics, you know, with the use of artificial intelligence and applications that can help them be more agile, to come with applications, you know, that can they can really roll out, you know, and get customers where from a point of contact, like, let's say, you know, getting them to be interested in a loan, to a point where they can actually disperse money. I mean, you can do it as quick now, you know, with a lot of banks in 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, but the report also shows that core banking transactions, about 40% of them have failed or completely stopped.
You're absolutely right.
So what does that mean?
Absolutely right. We're absolutely right.
Just to regurgitate, the report further revealed that approximately 40% of core banking transactions have either failed or stopped completely, marked by overruns in budget and under-delivering of expected expectations or scope.
Right. The biggest decision, or not so much of a decision, but the biggest priority in a bank, you know, as opposed to 35 years ago now, the biggest priority is not in changing the core, because I think most of the banks know that changing the core banking platform is a very complex exercise.
Now, as part of CIMB, it was really, really messy. I think Silver Lake was your client.
Correct, yes.
It is an impossible task.
Yeah, but we did it.
Legacy.
We did it.
Legacy issues, different entities merged, cross-border problems. I'm not just talking about Bank Bumi, CIMB, Southern Bank issues. I'm talking about Niaga and Bank Lippo. It was just a mess.
Yeah.
But yes, you did it.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, while the percentages of failures are high, I think at the end of the day, it doesn't mean that it cannot be done successfully. I think it's all about how we scoped it. It's all about getting the right partners in.
But the conversation then was like, why are we doing this? Why don't we just start anew and run with that and just migrate everything there? It's a lot easier, simpler, quicker, faster, cheaper.
Well, I guess, in many bank situations, when they make the critical decision, to embark, on a new core banking platform, I mean, they have to do it, with, very deep foresight about what they want to do in terms of getting the ROI. Examples of banks like, let's say, UOB or OCBC or, even CIMB or Bank Raya Indonesia, Bank Raya Indonesia or Bank Mandiri, they are all our customers, and they have been our customers, for a very long time. And I think, the impetus for them to change, has been, a variety of reasons, because the old core is just not doing the job, where they were. But they do realize that making the change, is not going to be easy. So what they have to do is to make sure that, the people that they work with, the vendor that they partner with, our vendors' reputation and proven background, they can get the job done. Like I said, we have been in the business for 35 years. We have got 300 banking clients around the world. And I can say, with pride, that we have successfully converted all our clients to our platform from all sorts of, different platforms.
Right. That's another way of corporations, especially financial institutions, want to move ahead is to partner with small, nimble fintech players, insurtech players, and see how they can migrate some of these smaller players' technology into their larger core banking transaction or platforms. What's the story from that angle? I mean, we've talked about the core banking transaction and transformation, which is a mammoth task, but a lot of companies and banks have done it. What about this whole plug and play idea where, you look at the sandbox, go to SC by SC, for instance, see what suits your requirement and then just partner them?
Yeah, I think the landscape has changed a lot, up to now. As I said before, the priorities for bank to totally change the core banking, is not the top priority. I think the top priority is, like you said, there's a lot of all these fintech companies out there. There's a lot of new ways to engage your customers. Customers are also, demanding that the banks, deal with them, operate with them differently, competition, et cetera. So it's come to a world where the banks are finding that they need to coexist. And the banks are finding that, in many cases, they find that, their core platform is actually inhibiting them from doing so. So this is where, cloud, comes about, right? And with the advent of cloud, banks are able to actually do a lot of the leapfrogging. Because in many ways, cloud, first and foremost, I think from an economic perspective, offers the most flexible and economic way, of allowing banks to embark on what I call experimentation, right? And it is inevitable. All the fintechs are riding on.
Yeah, but all regulators, especially Bank Negara, allows for experimentation to happen. They
correct.
Have a sandbox.
Correct.
See
correct.
What goes there.
There are regulations. There are compliance related initiatives which you just have got to make sure that you comply. But I think the shift from the traditional way of providing banking applications or more agile way that actually works on the cloud, it's happening. It's happening.
I mean, nobody's going to dispute that cloud migration is a non-critical factor. It is a critical factor.
Absolutely.
Let's look at how financial institutions or any other organizations out there, because you do serve outside of the banking sector as well. how the shops are arranged. When you have five roles overlapping and people can't really define what the differences are, for instance, Chief Technology Officer, Chief Information Officer, Chief Intelligence Officer, Chief Data Officer, Chief Analytics Officer, and then when you ask the five of them what's the difference between one another, they all fumble. I mean, if you ask a CEO and a CFO, what's your role? They can easily say, "Oh, I'm counting the beans. He's doing the business. Done. Simple."
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But you have these five roles. Some of them are there, some of them are there, and then you wonder, and then you're a vendor or whatever. You try to, and then the app fails. Who do you complain to? It's it's a bizarre moment.
Yeah.
So how do you resolve that kind of? I'm sure you're facing this kind of thing.
You are right in the sense. Although I've not seen the bank that got so many. Individuals, you know, occupying all these roles. A lot of them actually have several roles, you know, in the portfolio. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, those roles, however you want to put it organizationally, are required, you know, if you want to succeed, you know, in the future. You know, whether it is on the digital side, whether it is on the analytics side, so on and so forth. I think at the end of the day, you know, I think the bank must have a clear strategy. Right, you know, to move forward to the future.
I mean, I know they're clients. I'm less optimistic.
Well,
if you look at the cost to income ratio, banks are rising.
You're right.
If you look at the ROI, they're decreasing. Yeah. ROE, sorry.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, I think the biggest concern in any bank is to, you know, how to reduce the cost to income ratio. Right. I mean, that's one of the biggest concerns. That's on the cost side. But I think on the other side, you know, they have the other concern as to how to increase the engagement with customers. So it's a two sides that they need
just
to balance.
There's
two things they need to balance. And I think definitely the cloud technologies, you know, definitely if you do it right, gives you a lot of avenue, you know, to reduce the cost.
Okay, let's talk about that.
If you do it right.
So what would be the things that would constitute to doing it right using cloud?
Well, I mean, a clear example. It's very clear, you know. I mean, if you're not on cloud, you're owning all the capex of all the infrastructure that you have right now on your own, right? Cloud is a shared resource environment. You know, definitely, if your mind is oriented, you know, to that shared resource environment, definitely it's going to cut down, you know. In fact, on your capex.
What is the thinking right now among the industry?
The thinking is that it clearly provides the benefit.
Anybody militantly opposing this whole idea?
Well, I think there are resistance. I think a lot of the resistance is more in terms of understanding what they need to give up. Mm. You know, the huge investments they make, you know, currently on the current infrastructure. Mm. And what does it mean, you know, when you're on the other side? Mm. And, you know, what about security? You know, I mean, how secure is it? What would the regulator say, you know, if I enter in a long-term, you know, arrangement, you know, with a cloud provider? And all the applications I've invested and built, if I were to move it there, you know, what are the implications? What kind of disruptions, you know, is it going to cause? And is it going to work?
Okay, that is in the element of taking off the capex element when you go to cloud. Another area of exploration that you can share with us in doing it right?
Well, I mean, if you do it right, you definitely, you know, the way you develop applications on the cloud, you know, is very different from when you are on the premise. I mean, there are all sorts of tool sets that you can use that you can. That's an agile development approach. You know, as an example, you know, in the old days, it could take you up to 2 years to build something. You know, if you use an agile approach, exactly. So, you know, the whole idea of being on cloud to use the agile development approach is to use what we call the minimum viable product approach, right? You want to roll out things in an iterative way. So, you launch it, you see, you know, see the return ROI. If it's not there, you ditch it. Then you start another way. Exactly. So you have to leverage cloud, you know, to do something like that. So that is more from, you know, the market, you know, the customer side. And also, I think more importantly on the cloud is that, you know, you could scale, right? I mean, rather than one shot, you know, you buy all the expensive infrastructure and there's going to be a lot of excess capacity that you don't use on low demand. When you're on the cloud, you can scale it up and down. Sorry, on high demand, you pay more.
And it's 2023. I thought we are past this whole conversation of cloud migration and the benefits of cloud.
Right.
Why are we still talking about this right now? Do you feel that the market is still, there's a lot of holdout in terms of adopting this right now?
I don't think there is that tremendous holdout. I think if you talk to every single bank.
We should be discussing about AI. We should be discussing about automation, about Industry 4.0. That is the conversation that we should be talking about, not just not about the infrastructure. The infrastructure is just assume everything is on the cloud already.
You're right. I think, like I said, you know, I mean, banks, by tendency, you know, they are conservative, but
They will lose out, the faster players.
But definitely the cloud discussion is sky high, you know, on their agenda. So different banks take different approaches, right? Some are more aggressive, some are less aggressive. I think it's all about cost, risk, and skills and talent. You know, that's another big factor you need to put into the equation.
There's also the philosophy that permeates across the organization. If you have folks, I'm not talking about biological age. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about thinking, mentality, and philosophy. Mm-hmm. If you have an old-fashioned thinking, you can be 21 and have an old-fashioned thinking mentality. You can be 65 and be forward-thinking. The philosophy behind this industry is that's why people keep on saying, like what you just literally said, banking is by nature conservative. Mm-hmm. That is why banking will lose out, way I put it.
Yeah. You'd be amazed what banks are doing now to change the culture in the bank. So, a lot of banks are setting up banks within the bank. Like, as an example. I'm not kidding. I mean, it's not like a different bank. You know, it's like setting up a different operating unit. Just to tender, to all this new age, kind of banking and getting the new segments.
And they follow a completely different branding. I can mention a few.
Yes, some of them do that too.
Give them free branding.
We have been working with some of those banks, different brands, even right down to setting up different legal entities.
And you are with them every step of the way.
We are with them every step.
So how is it turning out in terms of some of bank within bank?
An example of an engagement, that we did in Thailand. I mean, they are the big behemoth, bank, right? One of the top banks.
Yes.
Because of the strong legacy, culture, it's very difficult for them to leapfrog, in the future. So they decided to launch themselves in the digital world by setting up what they call monoline banking. So it's essentially saying, look, this is a new target segment, micro lending. Right, I'm going to have a new CEO. I'm going to have a new board of directors. You go and make a decision. How do you want to go about running it?
So there's a high level of autonomy.
High level autonomy. Then they need to look for the platform and technologies that can allow them to do that. While at the same time, and this is the trickiest part, is that having your own autonomy doesn't mean that. Your wall is completely separated. Right? Because at the end of the day, you're still one bank. So the technology must be smart enough to be able to talk, to your old technology so that everything, works out well.
Because customer experience will be very, very poor.
If
the bank within a bank asked me the same kind of New York customer kind of thing. Why would I? I'm already part of the bank.
The
key part here is that, because we're running out of time, but the key part here is that the banking industry, financial sector is actually quite crucial for us to move ahead. We need them to survive, and not just that, we need them to thrive in order for us to be productive as well. The times are very critical right now when it comes to trying to build the economy, personal wealth, many more. Do you feel that the banks have the wherewithal to ensure that they can deliver the necessary products to the market to a point where people can see that banking industry is actually up to date and up to speed with what is required right now?
Well, I mean, banks for many, many years, right from the days of ATM to online banking, they've always been in the forefront of technology. And I've got no doubt, that this time through, they will, be at the forefront, right? I mean, some may see that they're not operating fast enough, but I can tell you, a lot of banks are putting a lot of emphasis, to do that transformational, leap. Some are faster, some are slower, some are taking different strategies.
Normal.
I think they'll get there. I think a lot of the impetus is driven by what the customer wants. A lot of the impetus is driven by everybody's on the cloud. If I'm not on the cloud, how am I going to amalgamate together and book together the fintechs, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that move is inevitable, right? And I think for banks, if they do it well and they do it smartly, you know, what's the biggest advantage of being a bank to be in that fintech space? I think they, if they do it well, they will be the best players to compete with all others, including
they
new digital banks.
They will crush the players.
Don't forget, you know, when customers talk about banking, reputation, brand is very important.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so the conventional banks have it.
I would, I would think twice, you know, trying to go for a small, you know.
Exactly.
As opposed to a oil tanker kind of bank, you know, like.
So banks, so the conventional banks are not, you know, not sitting around doing nothing. They are doing, doing a lot of stuff.
I'm sure. But the question is, it's not easy to turn an oil tanker to another direction. But when it does, it's unstoppable. It's behemoth.
It's unstoppable. You know, it will,
but that turning,
it will go. It's a question of speed, right? I mean.
Fantastic. Okay, very quickly, final comments on this industry and perhaps your company.
Well, I mean, like I said, I think the industry is an exciting one. And I think, you know, the technology side of financial services, you know, is always a growing, you know, industry, particularly in our part of the world. Notwithstanding that, you know, we're not 100% insulated, you know, from what's happening, you know, outside, you know, of our region. But very excited, you know, by what's happening in the world. I mean, we're also, in our own company, reinventing ourselves. We actually carry three core banking platforms. You know, there are, you know, for different markets. And we're putting everything under the cloud, right? But I think the more important thing is that because we have got such a long history of engagement with banks, so we know the pains that they're going through.
Of course.
Yeah, and we are able to offer them, you know, scenarios and options on how to get them to transform in the most
efficient,
well, risk-managed way. Banks are very fearful of engaging on things.
Rightfully so, because I keep my money there. I want them to be a little bit more conservative than me, you know. Okay, fantastic. That was Andrew Tan, the Group MD of Silver Lake. You can learn more about their company at their website. Also, there's a lot of resources that can be found here on Astro Awani. Do check out Niaga Awani on all our resources there as well. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.